Hey, America.
Start listening now.
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Pretty good. Yeah, good.
Happy belated Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. Yeah. Everyone have a good whichever holiday they have.
Yeah. Pretty solid.
Good.
Ate the cookies, good. You know, lit the candles. Danny, what'd you get up to?
I went to the hometown of Bob Dylan and saw Cats.
Do tell.
So I know we trash talk Great Britain a lot on this show, but I have to ask. The Queen has knighted Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. That man gets to vote in the House of Lords now. He gets to make decisions for the country, and he made this movie. I have a couple of... God damn it, Britain!
All right, Danny, are you good?
I'm fine.
You're good?
Yeah.
All right, well, in that case, welcome to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the world's leader in hungry hippos per capita. I am Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
And Danny, you're still good?
I don't think he'll ever be okay again.
I can last the 45 minutes.
Okay, all right. So we have come to part three. Three
count them.
Of our Eurovision decade in review.
It's the last one, we promise.
For now. And
welcome to part three of our two-part episode on the best of
yeah, yeah. Exactly.
We totally planned this out, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The outline took like 20 minutes to write. I thought it would take 20 minutes to discuss.
Eric, have you met us?
No, we really haven't.
Not really. So we have some of the big decisions, the big favorites, the absolute best, the absolute worst, that sort of thing. But before we do that, we do have... some news. We haven't done news in a couple weeks, so here comes the Euro news. We're going to start with Albania.
Albania watch. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. We haven't been on Albania watch since like the 1970s, and we had to keep an eye on them. So anyway, there are.
But they were keeping an eye on us.
From
their thousands and thousands of little tiny bunkers.
Yes.
Yeah. I really want to go to Albania just to
anyway,
visit.
There's Eurovision news.
Yes.
We have the first song for Eurovision 2020, and it's... good.
It's really good.
I like it.
I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Albania's entry for Eurovision 2020. I can't believe we're actually saying 2020.
I haven't heard it yet, and I am going to try to make a concerted effort. If we don't cover it on the show, I'll probably try to just keep myself fresh for it.
Okay. Until we either review them on the show, or possibly
or the party.
Very exclusive Shisha Eurovision party. The annual Eurovision fete.
What genre is it?
Ballad.
Okay.
Big voice ballad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like a North Macedonia from last year kind of ballad?
A little bit more.
That kind of thing?
She's younger.
I wouldn't say it's a lot like that.
Okay.
Good drama, big voice.
Really well performed, which I think was the difference.
Yeah.
And
she sold the hell out of it. So,
I guess we don't know exactly how close it was, but it felt like it was neck and neck between.
We do know.
Oh, we do?
We do know.
Tell me more.
It was only a 3-point split.
This is
a very, very hotly contested FIC final.
Okay.
Festival of Kungis. Arilena Aras Shai, of course, taking the top. Elvana Gyata's Metana, which is a very sort of upbeat, danceable.
It's a fuego.
Little Albanian fuego.
Now, is Shaj her name, or is this the name of the winning song?
Shai is the
song.
Shai. Which
Shaj.
Shaj.
This is an American show. Yeah, we'll say it.
We mispronounce it because we damn well have liberty to.
And that's how I beat Shaj.
Right, so Shai.
Aaron Carter songs.
Yeah, wow.
So Shai. It's called Shai.
As any other kind.
Which means swear or curse. Uh-huh. So that's kind of badass. But it'll probably end up getting swapped to English, I'm sorry to say, which is kind of a shame because I love hearing the Albanian language.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time picturing that. Although apparently it was written in English and then changed to Albanian.
Yeah. Honestly, it might be the kind of thing where she records the both. I mean, they'll probably both end up on a promotional CD anyway. And then whichever one the delegation thinks has more power, they'll push through to the big show.
I hope they stick with Albanian, but I know that that's just not always how it goes. But it's good.
It's easier to play on the radio if it's in English.
Yeah.
I mean, I forget about that all the time, is that these Eurovision songs get radio play in Europe a lot before they're, you know,
put in
Eurovision.
Some
that's
countries
that's
more
how
than
you
others.
Can tell where the traction is.
Yeah, some countries more than others. I mean, you'll find a little bit more crossover in, say, Eastern Europe than you would say. These songs aren't necessarily going to pop up on, you know, BBC Radio 1. They don't even play their own entries on BBC Radio 1.
No, they do not.
No, which is kind of
coming up at the top of the hour, it's Shaj.
Moving on. What do we got next?
By the time the show airs, we will know the singer for Georgia. They're going to be crowning the winner of Georgian Idol.
Ah, Jimmy Carter.
All right, I've been rehearsing these names. I'm going to delegate these names to one of you guys. All right, who's going first?
Me. So, one of the four that we might be seeing from Georgia is Tornicky Kipiani. Or
we could have Barbara. I got that part.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Samarkand. No, Samkaradze.
Old Sammy Karate.
That's what they called me back in kindergarten.
Derek, or number three.
Tamar Kakalashvili.
I hope it's that, because that's like going to be fun to say on every show for the next 5 months.
Oh, it'll be just like a thing where it's just like, and then from Georgia, it's Tamar.
I can almost guarantee that they'll do that. Yeah.
And then the last one is Miriam Gogiberidze.
I think that's actually
like Gogiberidze.
Miriam Yogi Berigi.
Miriam Golgi apparatus. So, Sam, how are they actually?
Get the hate mail in from Georgia.
Okay, we played Biscebi. Twice. Let's do it again.
No.
Can we play Midnight Gold again?
Ooh.
Good.
That's not a bad idea.
Throw to Midnight Gold!
You were right, by the way.
Yeah.
That's great.
I know!
Derek, hit it!
So it'll be, and again, I don't speak Georgian, but Tornike Kipiani, Barbara Samkharadze, Tamara Kakalashvili, or Maria Gogiberidze.
Gotcha.
And Georgia selects the singer before the song?
Yeah, they'll select basically the winner of Georgian Idol, and then they'll tailor a song to them, which is a little bit different than what they did last year, where they had kind of, between the four finalists, they had three songs. They had two singers actually singing Keep On Going, which is kind of weird.
Okay.
Oh, we talked
someone missed a deadline.
We had a conversation about that. Like this idea that if you have two singers saying the same song, you have a better chance of winning. That's happened.
Assuming you're the better of the two.
Assuming you're the better of the two. Because that's people true. Have an easier time comparing the two different versions rather than comparing two completely different songs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a whole economics theory.
So is that what was going on with Midnight Gold? Did they win Georgian Idol? Because that's awesome.
No, that year the Georgian broadcasters internally selected Nika Kotrov and the Young Georgian Lolitas, and then they had like three or four songs, and then they picked the song to match it. So good.
It is really good.
Yep.
We don't have real news from Greece. We just have quasi-real rumors.
Yeah, there have been some major rumors. I don't like to fully embrace things as gospel truth until it's been confirmed by the European Broadcasting Union, or at least the broadcaster, but...
That's not the American way, Sam. we need to run it as news right now.
Speculate, obfuscate, fabricate.
Yeah.
That's right.
So Yanni is going... No.
I'm not going to let MSNBC get ahead of me on this one. Yanni's singing for Greece.
Okay.
Her name is Stefania Liberakakis.
Yep. So supposedly she's been selected for Greece. Hasn't been confirmed. We don't have the song yet. Supposedly she's shopped three different tunes to the broadcaster and they're deciding amongst them. She is a 17-year-old Dutch singer of Greek descent. And she actually was a junior Eurovision alumna. She was one third of the group Kisses. Yes. Came in eighth place of the song Kisses and Dancing. Clap.
Derek, whatever you do, do not throw to a clip of whatever that is.
Kisses and Dancing. That's like Wang Chung singing Everybody Wang Chung Tonight.
Or Sisters.
Singing Sisters. For the love of God, do not throw to Sisters.
So she's got a little bit of junior Eurovision experience.
Mm-hmm.
She's released a couple of singles since then. She is above 16 years of age, so she can do Eurovision.
And if she's the artist for Greece, she will be called Stefania.
Probably just Stefania.
From what I can tell, she already just goes by Stefania professionally in a lot of cases. I checked out some of the singles she has out, and it's fine. It's about what you'd imagine a Dutch singer of Greek descent who is a pop singer to sound like,
sure.
I guess. She seems to be a fairly big deal in the Netherlands. Sort of like young Demi Lovato, Disney Channel star type of a figure. She voiced the main character in the Dutch dub of the film Wonder Park, that animated movie that no one saw. Well, she was in the Dutch version of that.
That's cool.
And it seems like she's pretty well known there. I think it was something like 250,000 to 500,000 Instagram followers, something like that.
And
so
that's
big. She's decently well known for being a Dutch teen star sort of a thing. So that seems like a pretty solid strategic choice.
How much you want to bet that it's not her at all? We've got egg on our faces right now. But we've got Avgo Lemono on our faces at the moment, you know.
Then it'll just be Yanni, and that's fine. We also have a little bit of info on Moldova's selection. They're changing things up a bit.
Yeah. They normally have done a full-on national final, like O Melodie pentru Europa.
Mm-hmm.
So a melody for Europe.
But we might get Potato Potato this year.
That was Belarus, but yes. It's the same kind of system. It's the same, where we have, instead of a national final, they'll have what they do with these big live auditions at the live stream, and you get the good, the bad, the ugly, the off the frickin' wall.
Anyone can do it, and everyone can do it.
Yes, and sometimes the really, really great stuff bubbles up there that doesn't even make it to the national final, so we kind of get the pure unadulterated. Like, there was a song last year that was kind of in the same position as Potato Potato Acapulco for Belarus.
Called Acabulba.
Acabulba, sorry. Acapulco. That's the problem. Everybody referred to it as Acapulco, and it's like... It's screwed up my head.
Just ingrained in your head now.
Yes. I blame my dear friend Ewan Spence for this, for the record.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Ewan Spence, enemy of the show.
But there was a song from Moldova last year from a group called Lume, called Sa Adriano Celentano, which is basically just how much they love Moldovan wine. And can we actually just throw a clip to this? Because they actually had a pretty good studio version of it. Yeah? You can do that for us? Play it! Enjoy the plenty on the valley at tomorrow hot. Enjoy the red wine, our young and white wine. Let's sing together, little Right, next up, we will have a little bit of news from Norway coming up in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
We will have the artist reveal for Melody Grand Prix in Norway on January 6th. We'll hear 25 acts to be announced. There are going to be 4 semifinals of 5 songs apiece, and then 5 acts will go immediately to a grand final. I think they're probably like the big names that somehow got some sort of magical fast pass to a big final. We were supposed to find out these names on Friday, the 3rd of January, but it was actually bumped due to the national news coverage of the funeral of Ari Ben, who was the son-in-law of the king, or former son-in-law of the king and queen. So
I'm a bad Norwegian. I have no idea who that guy is.
Yeah.
Was, I guess.
Rolling on, they've released artist names for the Croatian national final. Dora, that's the name of the national final, not the name of the singer in the national final, for the record. Also Slovenia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are a couple of familiar names in the Slovene national final for EMA. Again, EMA is the name of the national final, not the name of the artist in the national final. But eagle-eyed viewers will recognize the names Tinkara Kovac, who sang for Slovenia in 2014. She was the badass flautist.
Yep, that's a great song.
Ran around.
Mm-hmm.
And Lena Kuduzovic, who got 3rd place at Junior Eurovision 2015, the song Prve ljubezen, first love. So yeah, she's going for it too. She's now of age. She can give that a crack. So yeah.
Neat. Yeah. So that means Riven is not going for it again?
Doesn't seem like it. I did not see Riven on the list. No.
She's great.
She's fantastic.
It seemed like it was only a matter of time. Belgium, but that she would eventually get in and win the national final there, or whatever they do.
Maybe next year.
Can't win if you don't try.
Maybe Ivan. Jacques Kudic could pull some strings over there in Croatia.
Oh.
Be nice to see him again.
Really?
He's a spectacle.
Yeah?
He's just a character.
I can see that.
So what else do we have next? What's next on the list, guys?
Well, the OGAE, which is the big Eurovision fan conglomerate, held its 2019 video contest.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And how do I want to put this? If we're going to talk about who won, it's going to have to be time for... Watch. It's back, baby. It's time for Maruv Watch. Maruv's Siren Song video won video of the year from the OGAE. Won first place.
It would have won Eurovision, and it won this.
It's just it's just a fun fan competition.
Mm-hmm.
Each national organization will submit a video that they think was one of their best non-Eurovision songs.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a Eurovision artist. Mm-hmm. It could be a disqualified Eurovision song that could have been. So by that wonderful loophole, Ukraine, and therefore Maruv and Siren Song won, which
they
is fabulous.
They won the real title of the year. Sorry, Duncan Lawrence, you suck. Some of the names it beat, Loic Notet from Belgium, had a cool video. It is a pretty cool video.
He's so awesome.
And I think he was second, and I think it was 6th place. The U.S. or the rest of the world delegation from the OGAE.
The miscellaneous group. Yeah.
Yeah. They chose High Hopes by Panic at the Disco.
It wasn't Panic at the Disco, it was Brendan Urie, but he put on a mustache and a tracksuit, and his name was Yuri Brendanovich. from Ukraine.
Yeah. But yeah, Maruv beat Panic at the Disco for that thing. So congratulations to Maruv for finishing the year with a pretty cool title, beating out some pretty big names, and also beating Panic at the Disco. Mm-hmm. And that has been this edition of Maruv
Watch.
I had an explosion.
That's nice.
We go segue from the explosion to, oh, someone died. Sam, you want to take this one?
Put that on me. I see how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's, you know, as time passes, we do say goodbye to some beloved members of the Eurovision family. The representative of France at Eurovision 1963, Alain Barrière, he passed away at 84 earlier this month. He came in fifth place in 63 with the song Elle était si jolie. She was so lovely. Fifth place, really a rather strong showing for France. And yeah, passed away at 84. Alain Barrière, Godspeed.
Godspeed.
Elle est bien trop jolie. Et toi, je te promets. L'aimer toute une vie. Tu ne pourras jamais.
Ah. By the time this show airs, it will be a new year.
Happy new year.
Indeed.
It will be a new decade unless you don't think it is.
In which case, happy early new decade, a year in advance. But a lot of people have been doing year wrap-ups and really decade wrap-ups. I got to give some shout-outs to a pair of friends of mine who have literally gone through every single song, the 408 songs that have represented countries at Eurovision over the past 10 years.
They're doing the Lord's work.
They really are. They really, really are. So Tobias Larsson, who was out of Helsinki, and my friend Ross Middleton out of Edinburgh have both done these massive rankings. So check out hashtag Tobson, TOBSONTOP. So Tobson Top 408 for Tobias's musings from Helsinki. Or Ross Middleton runs ESC Piff Paff or Piff Paff blog out of Edinburgh. So if you check out hashtag Piff Paff 2010s, you'll see his rankings as well with GIFs or GIFs if you want to be.
It's GIFs.
Do we know their number ones yet? Their numbers one.
Ross Middleton has Tobias. Last I checked, as of like a few hours before recording, he was hovering around number 20. So by the time the show airs, everything should, I assume, be out. Also, our friends at Aussie Vision, so on Twitter at Aussie Vision Net, wrapped up the top 100 moments of the years. Plenty of videos, plenty of music, plenty of memeable moments.
Mila Moskov was in there.
Heck yeah, she was.
Ranked way too low, by the way. Sorry, agreed. Aussies, but you're wrong.
Yeah.
Top 100 include Mahmoud's standing in front of an enormous screen that says
it hurts to be alive.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, is it?
It absolutely
thank
is.
God.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, there's a lot of great ones.
Yeah, so major props to the guys over at Aussie Vision.
Yeah, that's a really fun list to reminisce with. So yeah. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, really fun.
Yeah, I was not aware of, there was a crowd reaction at Sanremo to...
When Loredana Bertè didn't qualify for the top three?
Yeah, she finished fourth and the crowd just went like ballistic. That was fun.
That was amazing.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They were not happy.
You do not stand in the way of Loredana Bertè. I found that out the hard way. Before we throw to our show, socials, New Year's Eve, for us, that's the future. For you listening in the past, brought the newest edition of the ESC Top 250, a huge, massive F-off countdown of Eurovision songs as voted off by the fans. Since 2012, Euphoria has won every single year. Will she do it again? Will Loreen go for the gold again?
If it does, I'll have something to say about it.
But we'll find out next week.
I'm going to dismantle Eurovision if it happens again.
I'm just going to go on record here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hunch that this is the year that it does not win.
What do you think will win in its place?
Kino, Spirit in the Sky.
Yes. Honestly, yeah.
Really?
Really?
This is a fan vote, right?
It is a pure fan vote, yeah.
And recency bias is a big thing with that list, especially.
Yeah, absolutely.
Euphoria being kind of the consistent exception to that for some reason. I feel like the fan obsession for Spirit in the Sky is still pretty strong. I think it might happen.
I also agree that I don't think Loreen's going to do it again. However, I don't think it's going to be Kano that tops it.
What do you think it's going to be?
Who is it going to be?
I think it's going to be Fuego.
Oh, I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, I think Eleni could do it.
UK, still in love with you.
Not going to be that way.
I love that absolutely weak laugh that joke just got. Yeah, that would be funny if that tragedy happened. That would be great.
Aw, they're nice folks. Derek, who do you think will take it?
Oh, this is going to be tough. Throwing another, I think Euphoria is going to take it again, but I mean, it's just it's a powerhouse. I don't see any reason why something would have knocked it out of the top spot, unless it's...
Last week you did say it was overrated. The most overrated.
You can't get any more overrated than that. It's the best of the best.
I mean, I guess it is a crowd pleaser.
It's a crowd pleaser, yeah.
And if everybody...
I still think it's a good song. Yeah. I'm going to defend that. I don't think it's a bad song.
If people are voting for their top 10 and the points are allocated based on that over, you know, the thousands and thousands of songs that we've had...
I mean, I think Spirit in the Sky could end up top 10 somewhere.
Yeah.
Mare Los Dos.
Yeah, Mare Los Dos came in third last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Could see that,
so yeah,
the top five again.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Soldi will be in there somewhere. Wouldn't be surprised.
She Got Me is probably going to be way up there.
Oh yeah.
The first year, there's always a big.
I keep forgetting that it's called She Got Me. I keep forgetting that that's what it's
called. As opposed to...
Thirsty Dancing.
Thirsty Dancing. Wham, 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 wham,
wham, wham, wham, wham, wham. Those are real collab producers this year, so I think they could end up high up there. But I think Fuego's got a real shot to do some damage.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll let y'all know next week.
At least two of us will be wrong. Possibly all four of us. That'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
We're all equally dumb.
It's Say Na Na Na. Oh,
my God. For some reason, it's Killing in the Name by Rage Against the Machine.
It's Hatari.
Ooh, yeah. Where do you think that'll end up?
I think
top 10, top 20?
Top 10, I think.
Top 20.
It'll be 10, just like last year. I will say, when I went up to Hibbing this last weekend, my boyfriend did have the nerve to play Say Na 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 for his family, and they did hate it. So,
vindicated.
Thank God. Yes, vindicated.
spreading the word of the podcast.
Yeah. Sort of. you should let us know how much you guys also hate Say Na Na Na. You cannot do it too much. Let us know on Twitter. We're at 12 Points USA. That's 12 Points USA on email. We have email.
Yes.
12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Same thing. 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Eric's on Twitter.
That's true.
Eric is tweeting.
Eric is tweeting. E-R-I-K is tweeting.
Mm-hmm. Sam's on Twitter.
Yarp.
At ESC Insider.
That's a me.
Derek's on Twitter, but it's a secret.
We're wearing you down.
On Twitter.
What if I do like a New Year's resolution to like finally put my genius on Twitter?
That'd be great.
I think it'd be great.
I'd be in favor of that.
It'd be easy.
Just sharing your rants about cats with the world.
Yes, my genius, not my genius.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
This is why we love you.
All right. So we've already done about 9 hours of the best and worst of the decade. We've got a few more to go. And where do we want to start?
I'm kind of thinking we want to start looking at the years overall. I know it's sort of an overreaching kind of topic. So what, guys, do you think were your favorite Eurovision years overall over the past 10?
I don't have a lot of...
Yeah, you're new with this. So.
But Eurovision has been kind enough to hand us this decade's...
Thank you, Saint Janula.
Eurovisions. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So I've watched almost all of those. I think maybe I didn't watch 2010 just because I hate Satellite. like, I know how it ends and I don't like it. But I will say, I think the best year overall was this last year.
2019.
Yep, close. 2018 was close. Once again, might be recency bias, but we had a lot of great songs, a lot of great performances, some surprises... It was exciting. We had some wild moments. We had Polish women screaming to a deer god. That's just the cherry on top of the sundae. 2019 was great. We can only go up from here.
See, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. I think musically, 2019 was probably my favorite. I think it had a really nice balance between songs that are like Eurovision traditional crowd pleasers, as well as a couple of really out there experimental...
It felt like the classic Eurovision smorgasbord.
Yeah.
It felt like every course was there.
Right. Exactly. You had your classic ballads. You had your upbeat pop.
You had your what is going on here?
Yep. And then you had San Marino.
Yes.
So yeah, musically.
Already mentioned that there was a what's going on here.
Right, exactly. So musically, I think 2019, when it comes to the behind the scenes aspect of it, all the stuff that maybe folks either didn't necessarily see, but between staging and personal memories of, you know, the infrastructure and just the host city itself, I've got to give some credit to 2016. I thought that Stockholm is an absolute paragon of a Eurovision host city. They had a great venue, great staging, great hosting. The location of the arena was both convenient and lovely. I was biased because it was a very quick subway station from where I was staying.
It's always nice.
Yep.
The center was next to the venue. Easy to get back and forth.
Yeah, very easy to get back and forth. Anytime that there is either a shopping center or a grocery store within walking distance of a press center, that obviously knocks things up by about 25 points, which means that the Netherlands is already on its track to do very well in that. So Musical.ly 2019, behind the scenes, gotta give it to Stockholm 2016.
Fair enough. Derek?
I feel like I had different criteria for this than you guys did, this musical, because I looked at it as a show in its entirety, start to finish, including not just the music, but introductions, hosting, podcasting.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The interval acts.
Absolutely. There was no rubric for this.
All
it's
this.
Whatever.
Yeah, and I kind of was like, overall, I thought 2014 was the best. Just start to finish.
2014 didn't have Madonna, so
didn't
you
have Madonna,
one up
so
on me.
That. Yeah. But aside from the music, I think there's a lot of great music that came out of 2014. The stage was really awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The hosts were really entertaining. Pilo Aspic.
You're
in Greyjoy.
No, that was Copenhagen.
Oh.
It looked and it was a lot of fun. The postcards, best postcards. Interbellics were a lot of fun. I just thought everything kind of came together really, really well. There's nothing I can really fault from that year.
It was the full package.
Full package. I thought was really solid.
I find it interesting that was the last year that you were not present at yet.
Yes, I've been disappointed ever since.
I mean, I wonder how your view would have changed if you had actually also been there. I mean, because they had a killer Euro Club that year, but the venue itself was in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by nothing.
I'm sure that would have changed it.
Yeah.
But I would say like 2013 was a really great year as well.
Mm.
I really like that one. The ones I've gone to, I'm sure, have colored my view a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten to see more and I've had more challenges. Like 2016 was really stressful.
It was, yeah.
It was like, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a great show. But being there, like running around all the time. Eric,
what about you?
I thought about 2014. I thought about 2016. And I think I thought about it in a similar way to how you did, Derek. In terms
the
of,
beginning of a Dr.
In terms
book.
Of... I feel like for me, in terms of the show and ultimately the songs, and the songs are the biggest thing, it's got to be 2018. I have this playlist of Eurovision favorites that has a whole bunch of songs in it from since I started really following it and then going back a little ways as I get to know more about the show and all of that. And I feel like about half the field of 2018 is in that playlist because the songs are just so good. We talked a while ago about the quality of the songs that didn't qualify.
Mm-hmm. Especially in that first semi.
Touch on 2018.
Senek, A Matter of Time, Stone by Zivs, Oniromu from Greece didn't make it.
Ween.
I miss Ween.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got, just looking at the second semifinal, Laura Rizzotto, Funny Girl was kind of a cool tune.
Oh, and our Minnesota sister.
Yeah.
Should be
Minnesota.
Mentioned. Yeah.
I had a soft spot for Sarah Alto that year, too.
Well, she made it to the final.
She did.
Yeah, she made it to the final.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm 25th, blanked on this one. Well, true.
Yeah.
But I mean, just looking at the running order of the final of this show, there are so many fun songs, fun performances. You've got Under the Ladder, you've got Kalane, When We're Old, Nobody But You, Cesar Samson, La Forza is crazy. Say what you will about it, but That's How You Write a Song is a fun thing. Au Jardim, which we've talked about quite a bit. Mall from Albania, unbelievable vocal. Merci, Lie to Me, Higher Ground, something after that. And then Monsters by Sarah Alto. Bones, we've got My Lucky Day, which is going to come up in a little bit. V-Slot, Nyar. We haven't even gotten to the winner yet.
Or Fuego.
This show is so unbelievably stacked.
It was stacked.
Unbelievably stacked. Mm-hmm. I adore 2018. I also noticed when I was thinking about my favorite years, 2014, 2016, 2018, and I realized that any time the San Francisco Giants have won the World Series 2 years ago, if it's been exactly two years since the Giants won the World Series, it's going to be a great Eurovision. And unfortunately, based on current trends, it might be rough for a while. But anyway, 2018 is absolutely tops for me. Those were our best years. We're going to talk
about
our worst
year
years.
Overall. Let's start with Derek.
Oh, 2018.
You monster! What are you talking about? Is there some other 2018 that you hated? Why?
I know why. It's mostly Netta.
Yeah. let me explain this. And this is going to sound kind of weird. So you look at Azerbaijan 2012, and the way they put the show together was very much like the Beijing Olympics. It was, this is our country for everyone else. Portugal felt like, this is Portugal for the Portuguese. I kind of felt this weird insular presentation in a lot of the music and a lot of the choices. Like, we're not going to do LEDs. We want you to do this other thing. But I didn't think, looking over the songs, I love a lot of the songs in there, but I didn't feel like any of the songs were like real winners. Even if, okay, so if Toy didn't win, I'm like, well, what was the winner? I think Fuego has real staying power. I think we're going to be talking about that for years. But I didn't really get an impression that there was like a clear standout. Like, because every other year I can point to it and be like, yeah, that song won, and clearly it's a winning song. I thought a lot of like the intros and the interval acts were kind of boring. I didn't think a lot of the delegations knew what to do without LEDs. I felt like a lot of the staging was kind of unimaginative.
Hmm. What?
Okay. That's Dude. Just my impression.
Well. To each their own.
I thought the music was great, though. Overall, there's a lot of great songs in there.
So you're saying, like, first of all, no.
Okay.
But
Children.
Oh, I've been swayed.
Have you considered
the lobster?
No. Suppose Fuego had won. Like, Fuego had eked it out a little bit. How different is that whole year to you, do you think?
Kind of the same. I thought Fuego was a really good song and a great presentation. I don't know if it necessarily was a winning song. I'm doing air quotes while I say that. I remember having a conversation watching Netta perform the first time, and someone just turned to me and said, it doesn't feel like a winner. And I agreed, and I kind of didn't really get that feeling from anything. And it's an odd, and that's just maybe my opinion, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
That's I mean, what it's all about.
But it just, I remember watching every single performance thinking, that's not really a winner.
Huh. Hmm. So, like, I'm going to labor this slightly longer. Worse than, like, 2011, when Running Scared won, did that feel like a winner?
Yeah, kind of.
All right,
see,
I'm done.
I can see how it won.
I'm out.
I'm not saying I liked it. I can see how it won, though. I can see how in a field like that, it could just sort of nickel and dime its way to the top, which is what it did.
Mm-hmm. There are no right and wrong answers, children.
Except for that one.
I'm not so sure.
I'll take my lumps.
Eric, what's your worst?
My worst is 2012. I think this one was one where I definitely looked more... I shouldn't say looked more, but thought maybe a little bit more specifically about the whole package, the songs, the hosts, everything. There is very, very little besides Euphoria. I mean, Euphoria, this iconic thing, that was in 2012. But everything else about it was rough. Really rough. The postcards are bad. The hosts were really, really not great. They seemed very unprepared. The songs in general were largely bad. I think my two favorite songs from that year besides Euphoria are the songs that finished like 23rd and 24th, which was Should Have Known Better, which Derek talked about as being one of his favorites, and with good reason. Mm. And then Sound of Our Hearts. From
Compact Disco was Hungry, yeah.
Yeah, that one. That song is fun. Yeah. I really enjoy that. And watching the 2012 final, those two and Euphoria, I don't remember anything else, basically. It was just incredibly forgettable and just unenjoyable from a host standpoint. It just seems like a really, really...
disappointing
rough
year.
Rough year. Yeah. Really, really rough year. If that had been my first Eurovision...
Don't know if you would have stuck around.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It also had the Dancing Grandmas.
Yes.
Which,
is a thing.
Yeah.
It's a part of the Eurovision lore now.
Yeah. It had my less favorite of the Jedward songs. I'm looking at it again. I'm also noting that Norway finished in last place, which is not
so
what
really
I really understand. It's personal,
no,
isn't it?
No. Yes. That song was probably better than the one from Oslo. I don't know where that finished, but it was garbage. Anyway, somebody else say what their worst was so that I can stop talking.
Well, honestly, I'm going to be with you. When it came to the behind-the-scenes experience, like I say, I waffle with my answers, so of course I have to find a loophole to give myself two. So yeah, behind the scenes, I'm with you, Eric. 2012 is probably my bottom. It was cool to go out there, but between the hosting, the ham-handed postcards that we talked about before, the fact that the paint was still drying on the walls as we were in the press center and the arena, it's, you know, it was thrown together last minute.
Was a lot of that being in Baku specifically, do you think?
Once I got to Baku, it was actually a really fascinating place. I've never been anywhere quite like it, honestly. It's this mishmash of old and new and five different cultures squished all together into something that's very much its own. I was very happy to be there once I got there, once I got my visa, which is a whole other story for a whole other podcast, I think. But it just, between it only having my second Eurovision and to go from the German experience, which is generally very, very organized, very, you know, bright and shiny, you know, eins zwei, to Azerbaijan, where they'd never done anything quite like this before. It was all new, and I'm in a country that I don't speak very much of the language at all. It's overwhelming. It's crazy. There are aspects of it I did like. I will, you know, the fact that the day of the final, they made a lamb barbecue for us. They brought out, you know, fresh tandoor and, you know, fresh bread and grilled up lamb for all the press. And little touches like that were really wonderful. You know, you go into the back room of the press center and there was a tray of delicious baklava, or paklava, that they call over there. Like pastries and dried fruits and lovely teas. And it was That was, unfortunately, that was the only food that they had in the press center until that last day. Anyway, so behind the scenes, Baku, I was very, very mixed bag on. Musically, I'm going to have to say 2013 as a bit of a nadir. I think there are some incredible songs from that year. I Feed You My Love, certainly up there. Ken Vishem is absolutely one of my favorites. Omie from Aliona Moon from Moldova, I thought was underrated and quite lovely. But it just wasn't quite as punchy as a number of other years.
Do you feel about the winner that year?
It was fine.
Fine?
It was okay. When I heard it, I'm like, okay, that they're trying to win. You know, Only Teardrops, they're going for it. It'll probably do well. Zoom in on the cute flutist enough and people will vote for him. And they did. What about you, Danny?
Well, if our listeners have listened to the first two episodes... Countdown.
And alluded to.
They know that I hate Satellite. I think Satellite's really boring. So it's 2010, the year that Satellite won. 2010 for also another reason, which is just like, you know, like Jan Olesand has really done a good job of bringing in a different feel to the contest and making it evolve and feel a little bit shinier, but also a lot less kitschy and sort of the clunky old Eurovision of the past millennium. And I think that the show as a whole has gotten better and better every year. The Eurovision has, to me at least, become a lot more enjoyable in 2019 than it was in 2010. So I'm saying 2010 because Satellite is gross, and because it already feels antiquated, that show does.
It really does feel super old.
And yet at the same time, I would love to be a fly on the wall as Danny watches 2009.
That's Helsinki?
No, that's Moscow.
2010's Helsinki, isn't it?
No.
Oslo.
Yeah.
They're all the same city to me. That's right, Europe.
I'm sure they'll really appreciate that.
But I mean, that's like hyper shiny, very diverse, and possibly slightly more awkward hosting than even...
I love the awkward hosts.
Especially on the semifinals.
Oh, my. Our next category is something that's a little bit more particular. Probably the more discreet of our big categories for this last episode. We're going to focus on the staging. Just the specific presentation of these songs. Necessarily the song itself, but let's start with worst this time.
Okay.
I want to note that for both best and worst staging, none of us picked the same things.
Oh, thank God.
There will be issues taken.
Yes.
I will start with my absolute favorite worst staging, which is from 2018. This is I Won't Break, a little song I like to call This Little Russian Girl in a Wheelchair is Trapped in a Mountain. This staging was absolutely mind-boggling. I understand they've tried to make concessions and make the performance seem kind of without a hitch. They did that for the Still in Love with You. One of the performers had
cystic fibrosis.
That's right, cystic fibrosis. So it's not like she could be dancing and everything, but they made it look good with her being on stage. This one, straight up, they put this girl who can sing well but is in a wheelchair. Also, yes, debatable that she could sing well, but they literally put her wheelchair in a big mountain and then covered her in dry ice. This was just, I'm gonna say it, dumb.
Yeah.
It was dumb. I won't break. She says, well, she's literally stuck in a mountain like an ice climber piton.
I remember thinking, and still think, about how rough a song has to be for Russia to not qualify.
I know.
And now we know.
That song did not tick any boxes. In any way.
Yeah.
Sam, what do you got? What's your worst staging?
My worst staging, rewind back to 2010, and I'm going to have to give it to...
That's right. Worst show, 2010.
You didn't even watch the semifinals that year. I'm going to have to give it to the Dutch. Seneca with Ik Ben Verliefd, Shalali. This is what happens when you take I believe she was 18-year-old girl at the time, make her dress up like one of the desperate housewives of Appledorn. And have her performing in front of a crank organ and a circus. It was oddly styled, oddly staged. I mean, the opening bars of the song are this sort of like organ grinder, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So you would think, okay, they're bringing in that whimsy, but it was just too much whimsy. There is a thing as too much whimsy. And the fact that, you know, I can't remember who I was showing this song to, and I showed them Seneca. Lovely girl, vocals were fine, song was kind of meh.
But
how old do you think the singer is? And she's like, oh, she looks great for 40. And it just, and it's no, she was in her late teens.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh,
Costuming is staging. Costuming, that's a problem.
Yeah, costuming is such a vital part of the staging. And she was having fun. She, you know, had a big smile on, but it didn't have a snowball's chance in a microwave of doing well, especially with staging. And it breaks my heart. The song itself is very hit or miss. I know people who absolutely love it, and I have a dear, dear friend who gets a physical, painful reaction whenever she hears it. Like
her teeth start falling out.
We were road tripping through Scotland together, and we had the 2010 CD on, just happened to be on. I've never seen somebody reach for the next track button on a CD player that quickly. It was frightfully amusing. But yeah, so the whole package, but the staging in particular is, for me, is what sunk Seneca. Guys, what do you think?
I don't know this, but I believe you. Oh, you're asking what our picks are?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, so for me, there are a lot of songs that just have boring staging. Like, there are a lot of those. I don't know that I could pick one song that just has dull, uninteresting staging. So I tried to think about the song that was screwed over the most by its
wrong staging.
Yeah, having the most wrong staging. And for me, I really wasn't sure what to pick for this. And then it dawned on me, it's La Venda. 2019 Spain, last song in the final. Here's the thing. Part of the reason why this one angers me so much is how much I loved the staging in the national final. So let's rewind to that for a moment. In the national final, basically, it's just a big party. He's surrounded by people playing accordions and guitars and other fun Spanish instruments like paella or whatever. And and it's just this big festive thing, and it matches the song incredibly well. And then we get to Eurovision, and instead of the fun party, he's in a Billy bookcase. There's a robot for maybe 30 seconds, and that's it. There's a little bit of a dance routine, but it's just...
Wrong.
It's wrong.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. It's wrong. It's just... wrong. And it broke my heart. Obviously, he was in a spot in the running order where...
Last.
Where...
That's a good spot, though.
Is it?
It's not the worst.
It depends.
If it's
Fuego
was
last.
Yeah, but you gotta...
It has to be a great show.
Fuego. I thought Fuego was second to last, wasn't it?
Or was it second last?
I can't remember.
I don't think so.
Either way, you have to end on an absolute showstopper for it to really punch.
Mm-hmm. They might as well have put Mickey in an aquarium. Yeah, it was a real shame.
Yeah, yeah. That original staging, and they revamped the song a little bit as well, and I think the original version also had a little bit less oomph, I think, honestly, in a good way. It felt a little more authentic, a little less overproduced, and they just... I don't know. This staging just made no sense for the song or for him, and it's heartbreaking because that was and is probably one of my top three or four songs from...
Top five from that year. From this year.
It's so fun, and that staging just killed it. So that's my pick.
Derek, what's your incorrect opinion for this one?
First off, the Billy bookcase concept is a great addition to any home. Second, I really thought about this one because there's a lot of really boring stagings.
Yeah.
And just really uninspired staging that we've seen over the years where they just don't really do anything. Like, I think one of the ones that stood out to me, and this isn't my pick, but Armenia from this year.
Oh, Walking
just
Out?
Walking Out.
Yeah.
There was just nothing there.
And
it was kind of a mess. But the one that really stood out to me the most was Germany in 2016 with Ghost. And it felt like there were multiple people working on it that were not collaborating in any way. So she comes out in this anime girl costume, like light blue dress with little toys attached to it. Like, she's really into K-pop and Asian pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's fine, but you're on stage now. You have to put on a costume and look nice. And nobody said you can't wear that. And they had these fake trees on stage with these green laser pointers in them. So there was some smoke, and it had nothing to do with the song really, and I quite like the song, but I remember just watching it like, this isn't what it's going to be in the end, is it? They're going to do something else. They have a dress for her to wear that's going to be really like nice, and the whole thing was like, and she has these like platform shoes that made it really awkward for her to walk around, it seemed.
This is like the thing where like you were there, were you like part of the press delegation for this one?
Yeah.
Okay, like was it like you like went to the dress rehearsal and you saw what she was doing and you were like, oh, surely they'll change this.
Yeah, surely this is not the final draft. Right. Because you'll see some of the first rehearsals. They'll come out in their street clothes.
Yeah.
And they'll do the moves and they'll sing the song. But you know, like, well, this is not the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is like the second.
But alas, it was.
And I just couldn't believe it. I just seemed like they just either didn't care or
Yikes.
And it's like, there are ways that she could have been able to embrace that sort of Asian aesthetic, that sort of K-pop, J-pop that she loved so, so much in a way that would have fit in with the song. You know, bringing in something from Japanese or Korean mythology. Like
it was called Ghost. Bring in the girl from The Ring.
She could have dressed like a, you know, medieval Japanese
like an ghost Oni.
Story.
She could have,
But the only problem that, I mean, then you're opening up the issue.
Yeah, it's cultural appropriation.
Exactly. Which is not, she wasn't Japanese.
Which really wasn't an issue until 2017, but still. But I just think, you know, she should have had Netta's song. If she's going to dress like that and come out bright and colorful and high energy, I can, like, okay, yeah, you should have been singing Toy, but you're not. This is a really kind of somber kind of piece that...
It was really weird.
It was just so
really weird.
I liked the song a lot.
I like the song a lot. I still listen to it. Every time it comes on, I'm like, this is, you know, kind of gives me a moment.
But it's another example of it's the wrong stage.
It's the wrong stage.
It's wrong. It's wrong.
All right. That's the worst staging. What's the best staging? Sam?
Gotta give it to Love Wave. Armenia 2016. It was simple and static, but sexy as hell. Great camera angles. Great use of lighting. One of the earliest examples of us using, like, holograms on stage, and suddenly there are five Ivettas! Mm-hmm. And I think Derek will agree that you can never have too much Ivetta.
No.
See? So, yeah. That's for great. Me, the moment I saw that, I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. So, for me, best staging, Iveta Mukuchyan, Love Wave.
Nice.
Danny? Okay, Eric.
It's not Love. It's not Love Wave. I don't like Love Wave. You're wrong, Sam, and you're going to leave the podcast now.
It's my house.
I'm going to keep in with my best year and worst year. Worst year was 2010, but best year 2019 was just from this last year, Australia's Zero Gravity. They were swaying like lollipops, yes, but there was no other act that looked like this. This was fantastic. There's a lot of great stagings to choose from. Worst staging, you can really dig at the bottom of the barrel, but best staging was great. Eric's going to talk about pretty much my number two here. Eric, stop talking about my number two. But Zero Gravity was great. Both because she kills this song, but the version that they presented at the final was even better than the one that they did for Australia's
national
final.
Yeah.
It was roughly the same concept, but they just improved it so that it was perfect. I do have to say, I did think it was a little weird when they went like, and now we are in outer space. Anytime you go into outer space, it gets a little weird, but I still think Zero Gravity was great. If only they would have shot that little Russian girl into space. That would have been fantastic. Eric, talk about my favorite number two.
Okay, Danny's favorite number two is My Lucky Day.
I cannot gush enough about this.
Do I need a mop?
You will in a minute. So, My Lucky Day by Doritos.
Moldova
2018. Is this 18?
Yes.
The best year. And here's what's going on here. It's a trio. They each have a double, and they're doing this series of
opening doors and opening windows.
Yeah.
So the whole door, half a door, top half, bottom half.
Yeah. Door and window gags, that sort of thing. This is the one I think that took me the longest to decide what is the best staging. And this was so inventive. And watching some of the behind the scenes stuff of this and seeing how it was choreographed, how everyone is doing something all the time. There's no rest. At one point, because there's a brief point where they have to present three female performers.
Feet. Or three female feet.
Yeah. And
so the two men who are doubling the two men in the trio just step into high heels.
Mm-hmm.
So you only see from below the knees. I imagine they also had to like shave.
Absolutely. But there were minor costume changes during this and a number of other things. And
walking vertically, walking sideways. That was great.
Yeah. There's a lot of just really, truly remarkable stuff in here. It was so fun. And I think it was a song that for a lot of people was just sort of kind of fine, whatever, middle of the pack, that was truly elevated by its staging. Mm-hmm. So that's my pick.
We should
put
a link to the behind-the-scenes video. The behind-the-scenes video was absolutely fascinating on this one.
It's incredible. Derek!
I'll say 2018, that was the most memorable staging by far.
Yeah.
They really took the concept of, we need to do a physical thing on stage.
Because the staging itself is
very plain.
Yeah.
It's just fun and impressive. The staging itself was a performance.
That one really stood out. Like, okay, we don't have LEDs, we can't do like video stuff, we can bring in like performers, we can get props, we can do this thing, and it's really, really cool.
Definitely probably my favorite method of getting around the six people on stage limit was the putting the guy in high heels and all that.
Yeah. Everything they did, the choreography on that was insane. They screwed it up in the semifinal a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
At the very end, they couldn't get one of the doors open. And I was like, oh no. But they still qualified. But then they got it right on the final. It was flawless by the end. It was. I don't know how much they had to do to get to that point. It must have been unreal.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Derek.
Okay.
Your opinion. Derek, really your actual choice.
Yeah.
Best performance. I was really torn between Zero Gravity and this, and I go with this. This You Are the Only One by Sergei Lazarov. I've talked about a bunch.
Hmm.
It's just a phenomenal thing to look at. Even if you don't care about the song, that he could do it, and all the planning, the choreography, the lights, the video effects, it's just a remarkable thing. And if I meet someone and they don't know anything about Eurovision, they're like, what is it? Let me show you this video. I show them this. And they're just like, what is happening? And then when the cubes start coming out of the wall and he's climbing up, they're like, what's going on? And it's just remarkable. This one and Zero Gravity, I show people. And like when the reveal happens, they're just like, whoa, you know, every time.
Yeah.
And yeah, he really struggled with it at first. He fell off once, but...
Oh, yes.
That final performance, man, every time I see it, I'm just like, this is insane.
I think I mentioned in one of our previous recaps that I've seen shots of this performance from different angles and stuff like that. I still don't fully understand how he did all of that. Especially when he's walking up the steps that aren't actually there. They hide it very well.
Yeah.
that are physical steps that he's hanging on by a thread.
I want to say that the screen is slightly tilted back.
It is, yes.
So it's flexible enough that there are blocks that he's able to stand up on
behind
the screen, but it still looks flush.
And I'm wondering, like, where is it projected from?
I don't know.
Like, I don't understand how he cast a shadow. There's no light distortion from the steps behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks great. But they do this really cool thing, too, with the camera, where they'll do a close-up of him, and then they'll cut to a wide shot, and suddenly he's got dancers with him. And then they'll cut to him again, and then back out, and the dancers are just gone. So you don't see them...
He killed them.
He killed the guys. He absorbed them.
He had to be the only one.
They were pulling in on strings.
Yeah. And it was just kind of a neat effect. Like, suddenly there's dancers. Suddenly they're gone. And there's no, like cohesive narrative to it, really, in a lot of ways. But even still, it's just, like, spectacle.
Yeah. We've covered staging. Staging is a big part of performance. Mm-hmm. Another big part of performance is the performance.
Yes.
So let's talk about best performance.
Mm-hmm.
Who had the best performance? Let's go back to Derek again.
Hi.
More pressure on Derek. Go.
I would just say Australia 2016 Sound of Silence. She's just a phenomenal singer. Like, to see that much talent on stage. Some of her rehearsals, even the ones where she was not 100% on, were still better than other people's final performances.
This was the year that Australia almost won.
She
dominated the jury vote. It was ridiculous. And she varied it up. Like, usually someone will have, like, the song kind of finalized. Like, this is how I'm going to sing it. She played with it a lot. And she hit those notes every time without effort. And it was just unreal. And you saw the following year, 2017, a lot of other artists try to hit those same kind of high notes and didn't. And it was like, oh, don't do that. Dami can do that, but maybe you can. Mm. Just to see it the first time, I was just like, holy crap, people can sing like this.
Sam?
I have got to give it to Love Injected, Aminata Sabadogo, for Latvia 2015.
Mm.
Vocal performance was... It's one thing to be able to belt a song, and it's another thing to be vulnerable in a song, but to be able to bounce seamlessly between hard and soft and powerful and vulnerable and sweet and sexy at the same time, all while standing perfectly still. And I watch Love Injected every once in a while, and I'm still just taken aback by it. It's stunning vocally in terms of her expression, and I don't even have words for it. And I remember standing in the arena and watching her rehearse, and suddenly the bass kicks in, and it's not like the bass like whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not like a bass drop, it was just the and you just kind of felt yourself being knocked back.
Injected, as it were.
With love
and just power. And she, you know, Aminata is a small, she's a slight little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's like 5'3".
Yeah.
She's really tiny.
She's really teeny. And they just turned her into this absolute goddess, and she had the vocals to match.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still absolutely stunned by her, and I want to see more and more and more and more, because I think she's a brilliant singer as well as a brilliant songwriter.
Mm.
So... best performance in terms of getting into that moment, variation within 3 minutes, and just, you don't expect something like that. I gotta give Tom an Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Danny?
I have to continue piling on the train for my lucky day.
We
talked about how it's one of the best stagings, that it was impressive. But one of the things that prevents me from saying something like Fuego is the fact that live, her notes are not completely in tune, and part of it is because she is dancing so much. She's moving so much. It's tough to, you know, have breath support and do that when you're running around. There's no particular vocal acrobatics in My Lucky Day, but the fact is that they were able to mesh the staging, which was very impressive, with it. They're moving a lot. But all three of the people in that trio are singing as well as they do on the track, which is impressive for a song whose staging is so physical. They're moving so much. I think they went kind of hard on the performance. What am I trying to say here? They did really good.
They went ham.
They were great. Instead of trying for a lot and not quite getting there, they went for slightly a lot and nailed the hell out of it. That's what I'm trying to say. My Lucky Day, 2019. Great. It was 2018.
Fair enough. So I am going to pick Fuego for this.
Yeah, you are, and you're wrong. Oh.
Okay, moving on. And so somebody mentioned, Derek, it was when you were complaining about 2018, talking about how there wasn't this big showstopper. There wasn't this thing that really stood out or what have you. And I remember watching a stream of the first semifinal, 2018. And Danny, you and I were chatting while this was happening. Fuego was the last song in that semifinal, I believe. And I remember we were both kind of thinking like, this has really been great, but there hasn't been that one thing.
And then it did.
And then she walks onto the stage.
She struts
on the start of that. And then there's, and you're right, the vocals were not perfect, but the dancing, the presentation where they slowly introduced and then bathed us all in fire and so on. And we both just said, well, that's it.
That's it.
That's.
I think that's literally the text that I sent you. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. That in one of the strongest semifinals ever, this brought the house down.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it almost won.
But in the end, it didn't.
It's got to be Fuego. It's Fuego.
It's got to be Fuego.
It's going to be Fuego.
So all
right,
we got...
here it is. If this were the Oscars, we'd take the longest commercial break of the night right now before we get to...
the worst performance.
The worst performance.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. I'm excited to see who wins worst performance at the Oscars this year.
Warren Beatty for some reason.
Yeah.
Deservedly.
I mean, I think we know the reason.
Eric, you start us out.
For worst performance?
Worst performance. Now, you have a song that I don't know.
Oh, well, I envy you. So this was one of those things where I was checking out some of the old shows I hadn't seen before, and I heard and then watched a song that was so ghastly I had to go back and check it out again just to see if my ears were deceiving me. Was it really that bad? And it was. Finland. It's 2013. It's called Marry Me. It is... I'm getting some interesting things. Okay.
Is it bad, Derek?
No. Not bad.
No.
I hated it at first. It's grown on me.
It's interesting. Okay. I could see that. It struck me as profoundly obnoxious. It was poor. Live.
That was the point.
I guess maybe I just didn't get it then. I don't know. But I remember this was another one I struggled to come up with. Like, okay, what was a really bad performance? Then I remembered this and remember thinking the vocals were very bad. The staging was unbearable. And I guess you're saying that this was being performed ironically.
There was a certain... Tongue was firmly planted in cheek.
Okay, that makes sense.
Both hers and her dancers at the end.
Yeah. I will say, not knowing that, I hated this. I just... It didn't make any sense to me. It just seemed...
didn't make sense!
I could not believe this was in the finals of a Eurovision. It seemed like this sort of thing that is, okay, yeah, this is crazy and weird or whatever, but people don't normally vote for these things. This time they did, and I didn't get it. So that's my pick. Marry Me. Sorry, it might grow on me. I will let you know, podcast listeners, if it does, don't think it will. Let's go to Danny. Worst performance.
So I was watching 2012.
Uh-huh.
A year full of bad things.
True.
I know Sam disagrees with me on this one, but I'm going to go with Albania's performance of Sus. This would be like if we took La Forza, a great song with operatic vocals, and asked me to sing it. Sam is firmly of the opinion that she hits her notes.
I did not necessarily say that.
Okay, I will say there are many high and sustained notes, and she ain't got it. It's literally like... That is what it sounds like. And these notes hang for like 5 seconds, and it's bad.
I'm going to agree with you. I thought it was... I thought it was very shrill.
A
song that needed to be more delicate than that.
Yeah. It's not the worst song. That song is fine, but the performance was bad. She could not do it. She, darling, does not have the range. Sam, please tell me. 2012, how bad is this?
I still personally like it. Some of her notes did go a little bit off kilter, yeah. But the song is basically an emotional primal scream, so I don't necessarily count that quite as negatively as I think you do.
I would say what Danny did to approximate it also counts as an emotional primal scream. So well done,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
12 points for Danny.
Ooh, yes, douze points from the other injury. For me, my worst performance, also from 2012 actually, but fell at the semifinal level. And it's a shame because I loved this in studio. I loved what it was trying to do in studio, but when it came to the live performance, Slovakia's Don't Close Your Eyes by Max Jason May. I believe Slovakia's...
Max Jason May, which Power Ranger was he?
He was the shirtless one. Power Ranger.
Don't close your eyes, close your ears.
That's what they should have called it.
Yeah. And I love it when Eurovision goes rock, but I...
What's the worst moment? Just give us the worst moment. Does the moment last 3 minutes? Is that the problem?
Yeah, there were just so many so many notes that were just not there.
Not there?
Not there.
That's the worst.
It's a high register, you know, metal, frizzy hair, scream, oof. And it just didn't hit it. It just kept missing the marks in different directions, and I don't know if there was a problem with the earpiece or what, but in a genre that's supposed to be screaming, but good screaming... This didn't work.
What I wanted was good screaming.
Good screaming.
I said consummate screams.
I mean, at least he was shirtless, so I had something to look at when I had to put the TV on mute. Yeah, but, right. I mean,
That's part of the performance, Sam.
But I was watching this live, and I couldn't mute it because I was in the press center.
See.
Yeah, I loved Don't Close Your Eyes in studio. I want more metal. I want more rock. I want more gutsy... scary performances at Eurovision.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want them to
But I also want them to be good.
So, fair enough. Sorry, Max. All right, Derek. Bring it to us.
Okay. As a former ESL teacher, I take great umbrage with Lithuania's 2013 song Something, where he talks about his shoes. One is called Love, the other is Spain.
One is Love, the other is Spain.
A lot of respect for Melvin for working on his English pronunciation before the show. Because if you go and listen to the studio version, his pronunciation is... You can't really tell he's singing in English, but then he kind of brings it around and really practices and refines it. Andreas did not.
Did not.
Did not. It almost sounds like he learned it phonetically and didn't really bother with
the
pronunciation.
So is this not so much about, like, the melody was fine, the tune was fine?
The melody's not good. The song is not good either.
Oh, okay.
The song is not good and his performance is not good. And they do these weird effects where he, like, points to the camera and there's a star wipe thing. And yeah. The whole thing is just really clumsy and it doesn't feel rehearsed at all.
He looked vaguely stoned.
He looked stoned too.
I can't wait to watch
and
looked,
yet,
yeah. Looked and was, or maybe. What do you mean?
I didn't get too close to my
don't window. Step on beaver tranquilizers.
I will say though.
It's the only thing they could smuggle in.
Oh, he's Latvian beaver.
I am Blender.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Riga beaver at some other point, but I will say he did qualify for the final.
It came in, hold on, I have it right here. 22nd. With 17 points.
Oof. Wow. So it beat out...
It beat out L'Enfer et Moi, which is a phenomenally good song.
Phenomenal song.
It beat out Marry Me.
Good.
And the other two I could care less about.
Only Love Survives.
Only Love Survives in Spain, ESDM.
Oh, El Sueño de Morfeo. Yeah, that's nice. Right.
So before, I thought of another thing, and I know this show is already like...
Crazy
10,
long.
Already like 3 hours long. Yeah, it's longer than it's The Irishman.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... But like this is our Oscars, so it's on theme to be running to be running.
Like The Irishman, it's worth every second.
Talking about worst performance, I kind of forgot about this. I have to mention an entrant that I loved in Esti Laul in I think 2017 called On My Mind by Desiree, I think was her name.
I think.
This was a fun little mid-tempo bop that I was so into. I still love that song. The live performance, let me put it this way, I showed it to Sam and she made me turn it off.
Ooh.
I didn't want it. I did not want the memory of the studio version to be besmirched in my mind.
Yeah. It was pitchy to a degree I did not know was possible. And it was just a mess. She's a young singer. I'm sure nerves had a lot to do with it. So if you're listening, Desiree, that song was really great. You are super talented. I know the performance didn't go the way that you had hoped. Please come back. Do another song. Like, that song was so great. And I know we're talking about it in the context of worst performances, but come back. It was great. Yeah. Really, really great. Should we go from worst performance to worst song?
Let's get the really... We'll finish on the big best song.
Yeah. Finish on a high note.
It only feels good.
Yep.
I'll go first. 2010, once again. We return to the depths, and we also return to our old friend, the UK. In 2010, they had an absolutely mind-numbing song. Once again, someone is going to cover my close number two on this one in this category, but That Sounds Good to Me is just about as England screwing it up as England screwing it up again gets. It's so hokey. It's so cheesy. There's not a sincere part about this song. It's just five or six guys just joshing around and slapping knees. It's really just like a gross... it's a waste.
Yeah.
Would you say it does not sound good?
It does not sound good to me. Ugh.
I see what you did there.
There's so many ways to talk about how there is no way to think about this song, but just it sucks. It's just a waste. I would recommend that you listen to it, but you're just gonna say it sucks. Eric, what do you got?
All right, my worst. This was another one where I like wasn't sure, and then I remembered that this song exists, and was like, oh, never mind.
Uh-huh.
I know what's going on. It's "Do It for Your Lover" by Manel Navarro, from Spain, 2017.
First off, what are we doing for our lover?
It.
Okay.
Yeah. This song is just offensive in so many ways.
Taste?
It's pretty tasteless. The song sounds like it's from a Jimmy Buffett / 311 cover band.
Oh, no.
And it's bad. It's just bad. There's nothing redeeming about it. And I am relieved to tell you all that it finished in last place.
Oh, good. Fine. Some destiny. Yeah.
It got 5 points. Portugal. Yeah, Portugal Televote gave Spain 5 points. You know you didn't earn those, sir.
Wow.
You got those points because the country that gave you the points is tucked up underneath you. Anyway.
How to piss off Portugal. 5 steps or less.
We're going for all of it. We're going for all of Europe. This feels good. We are going to sweep.
They're clearly tucked in next to it.
Derek, this is the number two that I was talking about. Derek, say it. It's garbage.
Euro Nero.
I love it. No.
By Rambo Amadeus.
Love it.
Euro Nero is... I almost want to go back and say worst performance was this one.
This is agonizingly bad.
It is agony to watch.
Sam, you were saying between takes that we haven't thrown to a clip of anything in a while.
We are absolutely throwing to a clip of Nero Nero.
Here we are.
Yes, we are.
The best part is Derek has to do it.
No, I don't. Be dogmatic, bureaucratic, you need to become pragmatic to stop change, climatic, automatic, need contribution from the institution to find solution for pollution to save the children of the evolution.
Give me chance to refinance.
Oh my god. Ugh. There's no overstating the excruciating experience of watching this song.
I'm sorry.
Nero. I am not saying it's good or that I like it, but...
It's entertaining.
I love it as a Eurovision thing. Because every Eurovision needs those weird things that are just like, what in the hell is going on?
It's part of the smorgasbord.
It should be noted that was during a time when the running order was drawn randomly. That was the first song in the first semifinal in Baku that year. Yes. Imagine you and your family tucking in for a nice traditional Eurovision, and the first thing you get to see is Rambo Amadeus and his Trojan Rabbit, or whatever it was. No, it was a Trojan Donkey.
It was a donkey.
I want to note, again, that his name is Rambo Amadeus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, if you know this movie, it's the Room of Eurovision. Like, every single thing he could do, he did poorly.
Yeah.
But he did it intentionally.
It was almost like anti-Love, Love, Peace, Peace.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, let's take all the things that make a losing song in Eurovision.
But what do you expect when you send your country's version of Frank Zappa to Eurovision?
That's true.
He wasn't going to do this normally.
But it, the political, satirical edge of it felt like it was written by somebody who took a Poli Sci 101 class and now voted for Ron Paul and now understands how the world works. It's like,
oh.
No. It's
like,
it felt so misguided, kind of dumb. I don't know what to say. It felt like one of those bad performance art things you'd see in a small theater.
Oh,
somebody rented it out and says, I wrote this and I'm going to perform it myself. Like, don't, please.
You should have seen the version that he did live at the Euro Club that year where he was basically wrapped in tinfoil and did like a 45-minute long remix version.
45
something
minutes?
Something crazy long.
I would
like
have
that.
Walked up on stage and punched him in the face. I don't know how long I could have lasted. It's worse than waterboarding.
Dude.
Wow.
Just, oh boy.
Wow.
The only positive thing I can say about it is in the official music video, there are boobs. He walks by a couple women on the beach and they got their boobs out. It's great. For all you single guys out there, you're welcome.
All right, Sam, bring us back to Baku for the last time during the show.
For me, it's got to be Beautiful Song, which is Latvia in 2012. I cannot stand a song that can't stand on its own merits outside of the contest. And the song was completely referential about how great the song she was currently singing was and how I was born in distant 1980, which makes me feel old for the record.
Mm-hmm.
The year the Irish Johnny Logan won. Like, outside of... I mean, these are just lyrics of the song. And it just... It was just insipid and not...
So it's like a meta Eurovision?
It was a meta Eurovision song. And not necessarily done... It was done with a cockiness rather than like a sort of tongue-in-cheek. Like, what Euro Neuro is tongue-in-cheek, even if it is silly.
Oh, like a song about winning the Grammy.
Yes. It was basically about, you know, at one point he's like, I was getting calls from Mick Jagger. I'm sorry, Mick. I'm getting calls from Paul McCartney. I'll have to call you back. And it's
Oh, shut up.
And it was just...
Not you, Sam. Whoever sings this...
Latvia.
Yeah, shut up, Latvia.
The entire country of Latvia.
Latvia.
Yeah. And it... it just...
So... How did it do?
It did not qualify for the semi.
Well, that's good. And I think it's interesting thinking about Love, Love, Peace, Peace, which is kind of the same thing.
But
and
it's...
everyone loves.
Yes, but it wasn't competing.
Right.
Yes.
I know that these are still very different things, but there's an interesting contrast there.
That's a very good point. If Love, Love, Peace, Peace were performing as a contest entry, I would not hate it the way that I despise Beautiful Song.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's self-referential, but it's self-aware.
Yeah.
Anne Mary, I interviewed her in Baku.
It's shameless. I think.
She doesn't speak enough English to understand...
Oh, what she's...
What I think she was trying to convey. Or at the time she did, for all I know, she could be a fluent speaker now. I used the wrong verb tense there. At the time, it was very difficult to interview her. Her English was not great. Her accent is fine when she sings, but she didn't have the nuance in order to be able to portray this as a satire. And the lyrical content wasn't wacky enough to make it a fully self-referential, jokey entry. It was just, I knew I was going to grow up and be a singer. And I'm going to win this contest, like Johnny Logan did. And it felt cocky and uncomfortable and just, no. Bad Latvia. Bad. You go sit in the corner next to Lithuania and Estonia and think about what you've done.
Yeah.
The Baltics are losing it.
Estonia's at the table with the Scandinavians. I'm with you guys. All right.
We're in the final stretch.
All right.
Everyone do a drum roll in your mind as we get into the best songs. The best songs of the 2010s. Drum roll. Derek.
Best song, 2016.
Coming from a mile away.
Armenia.
Yeah.
It's Love Wave. No question. Absolutely love this song. Loved it the first time I heard it. Loved it every single time since. It's cool and sexy and slick.
In a good way.
In a good way.
I thought slick was bad.
It's experimental, but it's still approachable. It's less than 3 minutes, so it doesn't like force itself out into 3 minutes. It does exactly what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
It gets your attention. It builds
explodes.
And then it kind of explodes, and then it's got all this energy. It kind of mixes in traditional and sort of modern sound. Her performance I thought was great. I just absolutely love it. It's a song that makes you feel cooler just for having listened to it.
Yeah.
Ooh. I will say Love Wave is that it made me gasp the first time I heard it. Love Injected, the high note at the start of the chorus, I really did not see coming and sort of gasped. And then there is a high note at the towards the end of Love Wave that is
gorgeous.
Stunning. It breaks my heart that she missed it in the final. Maybe cost her a few points. But she absolutely nailed it in the semi. Absolutely nailed it. The staging was great. But yeah, both of those songs just have these moments that are just... I have a bit of goosebumps right now just thinking about it, honestly. Mm-hmm. It, in all seriousness.
Yep, same.
Very, very, very cool. I am fine with that choice.
Eric, what about you?
I thought this was going to be Calm After the Storm by The Common Linnets. It's the only song that at one of your preview parties I have given a 10 out of 10. But I've changed my mind.
Oh.
I think in terms of pure song quality, I have to give it to... And I kind of can't believe... I don't know that we've mentioned this country at all in these episodes. We definitely haven't mentioned this song. For me, it has to be Beautiful Mess by Christian Kostov, Bulgaria, 2017. It is a truly extraordinary piece of music. The vocals are amazing. The instrumentation is flawless. And it didn't hurt that the execution was phenomenal. I think going up against any song other than the one that it was behind, it could have won just about any year besides the one it just happened to be in. It is an extraordinary pop song. And that's it. That's it for me. That's number one.
You see, if Derek or I had said that, people would have accused us of bias, considering we worked so close with the delegation.
Yeah, there. You were in the postcard.
We were both in the postcard for that.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Derek more visibly than I.
No.
Yeah.
They didn't give us any direction. They're just like, okay, look that way. Now turn around and walk toward the camera. Like, what? Mm-hmm. And it shows.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Chris, you know, to be able to accomplish what he accomplished at age, he was 17, just incredibly talented, both vocally in terms of emotion. I will always sing the praises of Beautiful Mess.
Mm-hmm. Everything came together on that song.
It really
did. Every element worked. The staging, the songwriting, the performance. Mm-hmm. And he busted his butt. Even when we were just kind of hanging around the hotel, he's like watching his performance on his phone and practicing his
reviewing game tape.
Yeah, basically. Like
he was a machine.
24/7.
Yeah. And I want to stress, I am not picking this in any way because the two of you worked on it. This is the song of the decade for me.
Mm.
It is. And I am so jealous that you guys got to work on it. And I was in Dallas, Texas the day of the final. I was working a Quiz Bowl tournament. So it was hectic enough that I wasn't able to really keep an eye on it. But I remember getting back to my room and seeing some of Sam's posts saying Portugal had won. And then I saw that Chris had finished second.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy. I was happy for you guys. I was happy for him and for the song because it's a bit of an understated tune. It's not a big banger or anything like that.
No, really.
And sometimes with those, it's hard to know what Europe's going to think. And they adored it. And I adore it. That's it. I have waxed poetic about Beautiful Mess enough. Danny.
I'm sure there's going to be a very grateful contingent in Europe at large, since we have such a continental audience in Europe with this podcast. They'll appreciate this opinion. I said before that I think that the best year overall was 2019. I did think it had the best music. And I'm going to give a break to Italy, who always seem to be the bridesmaids and never the bride. They always have a quite solid song. And I'm going with Soldi from this last year. Soldi is amazing. I hate you, Derek.
Sam.
I would say one of my favorite things about what makes a great Eurovision song for me often is the fact that it really just sounds like a song that stands on its own on the radio. And Soldi doesn't sound like anything else Eurovision has put out. Not in so far as I've been able to experience. Soli's really sincere. It's not in English. It's a classic Italian move, but just Soli's really cool. Instead of like Love Wave, just you feel cool after it. I feel cool listening to Soldi, and it's great. Soldi's great because it's great.
Ah, that's all
you need to know.
Makes that's sense.
All. Take us home, Sam.
All right, for me, and I almost feel guilty about picking this after we were just
waxing
poetic about Beautiful Mess. And again, I will always, always love Beautiful Mess, but I kept saying in the back of my head, if Bulgaria doesn't take it, if we are going to lose to anybody, it better freaking be Portugal. Because I personally think Amar Pelo Shloish by Salvador Sobral, Portugal 2017, is just a work of art. It was no pretense, no BS, standing alone. It has everything that I love, that I hated about Beautiful Song, in the fact that Beautiful Song doesn't exist outside of the world of Eurovision. It has no context, it has no soul. Amar Pelo Shloish exists in its own world that just happened to touch Eurovision. It wasn't created as a Eurovision song. It just happened to be, hey, let's put this song together. I wrote this, you know, it was written by Sobral's sister, Louisa, who's an incredible singer and songwriter in her own right. And she's like, oh, we'll toss this over to the national final. Oh, people seem to like it. Oh, great, great. Oh, we've won. Oh my God, we have to take this to Eurovision. Okay. And then all the craziness that happened with that. And it just, this accidental, it just appeared like a bolt out of the blue. And in a contest that can often be so full of noise and spectacle and craziness, he stood on the small little satellite stage surrounded by people and you could hear a pin drop. And there's just some magical vibe that Sobral brought to the song and that the song brought to the contest that just, it was magic.
There is something undeniably non-Eurovision about this song.
Yeah, which is both maddening and refreshing.
And very deserving.
Yeah, because I mean, when people say, oh, something is so Eurovision, I point to that person and say, you are a freaking liar, because that doesn't exist. Eurovision can be and is anything and everything, and Amar Pelish Deutsch is a perfect example of that. And I speak the language, I understand what he's saying, but the vast majority of people watching had no freaking clue. And yet you still felt the pain and the emotion and the... Oh.
I mean, that's the thing. People watching may not have understood the words, but they could tell what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean...
And that's... I completely agree with Danny. It's very un-Eurovision in the stereotypical sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But clearly, it is very Eurovision because it... I was just saying, look, no one in the televote gave it less than 5 points. No one. Hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
No one in the...
In
the jury gave it less than 5 points, except... Montenegro, who blanked it.
Ooh.
And Bulgaria, who, well, they had an agenda.
Hey.
A fun agenda. I mean no disrespect to the Bulgarian folks. I'm sorry. Point being, it ran away in a way that no song has.
Yeah.
And with good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And to see Sobral, you know, he's not the traditional Eurovision winner. Let's be honest.
No.
And he fully admits that.
He had an open disdain for the whole concept, almost. Not in a mean way or anything,
no,
just sort of a matter of fact.
It's not his universe.
It's not
his world. And, you know, and especially when you're not expecting to win something and suddenly you have to give a speech in front of 200 million people in your second language.
Which he speaks very well.
Which he does speak very well. And your head's going a million miles a minute and your heart is beating out of its chest and his heart wasn't very strong to begin with at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You say things off the cuff that you realize, oh, that cuff was not very well cut.
Right.
Like what I said about Bulgaria.
Yes, exactly.
I think he absolutely meant what he said.
And I don't disagree.
Because, I mean, that's what he's been saying his whole life.
It's about just feelings, not fireworks.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with him saying that.
No.
When he criticized Netta for the same reason, I'm like, he has this right to his opinion.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he's not wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, Duncan Lawrence, when he won, he basically said the exact same thing in prettier, more floral language, say music first. And that's exactly what Salvador was trying to say. He just said it a lot more bluntly.
He's a blunt guy, though.
He's a very blunt guy.
He's Portuguese.
Yeah.
One, he's Portuguese, and I think...
he's also not in the best shape.
Yeah, at the time...
I mean, he was dying.
He was basically dying, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God he's doing well now. He's touring internationally. His new ticker is doing well. He just got married. He's doing fantastically well.
It's
new
great.
Album. Actually, two new albums.
I thought
albums.
He was married to the art. To the
in
craft.
That's legal in Portugal.
Yeah. So yes, Amar Pelish Deutsch is my pick now and forever for Song of the Decade.
All good choices, everyone.
Yeah.
Nice work.
There's no wrong answer here.
Amar Pelish Deutsch forever till the end of this year.
All right. We've got one more. Bonus category.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick. I know you guys are getting worried. This is just our favorite, personally, our favorite moment of the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
Could be anything. Just wild. Out there, something that doesn't fit in any of the categories.
I'll start just because we kind of touched on it before. The Bulgarian Renaissance. When...
In the 1500s?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
St. Cyril
changed
Methodius...
Changed music for centuries.
No Eurovision if that doesn't happen.
So, by the time I started attending Eurovision, Bulgaria had only qualified for the finals once in 2007.
Mm.
Did exceptionally well with the song called Voda. And and then completely fell off the wagon. Almost made it to the finals in 2012, tied for 11th place with 2G, with an awesome song that I kind of discounted at the time called Love Unlimited. And they took a couple of years off. It was like, you know what, this something's not working. Something's not working. And they came back in 2016 after having some major success at Junior Eurovision, coming in second at Junior 2014. And suddenly they had lit a fire underneath the delegation, and they came out with banger after banger after banger. They had Polygenova, mm-hmm. If Love Is a Crime.
Yeah.
Awesome track. Mm-hmm. Chris Kostov, who we've just extolled the virtues of. Mm-hmm. And Bones.
Bones!
From Equinox.
Best harmonies of the year.
Yeah. So awesome stuff. And just to see them coming from the country that just couldn't make it happen to something like qualifying 3 years in a row, making it to the podium, really, really solid.
Kind of a little mini powerhouse.
A little mini powerhouse for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, took 2019 off, but they'll be back in 2020, and I can't wait to see what's going to come up next. So, to see Bulgaria.
No pressure, Victoria.
You can do it, girl.
Absolutely.
Just have fun. Yeah. Anyway, guys, what do you think?
This is a personal moment. So, second year in the press center, sitting around watching, I think...
Since 2016?
2016. Yeah. This is back when we didn't know who the winner was going to be. It wasn't the betting odds favorite for like 6 months before the show. So it was like all these different countries and everyone's like, oh, who's it gonna be? And it comes down and they're doing the jury vote and then the televote, and the jury vote, Dami just absolutely dominated it. And she had like 460 points. Or something ridiculous, but she didn't do so well fourth in the televote, and they're kind of doing the televote points. And it comes down to Russia, You Are the Only One. He was behind Ukraine, had taken over first at that point, and he needed 405 televote points to win. And we, like, collectively kind of knew there's no way in hell you're going to get 405 televote points. But the entire press center, hundreds of people are just, like, sitting there on the edge, waiting for them to call out the number. And they didn't even get the whole number out. They just said three, and everyone exploded.
Yeah, three!
Because he knew... Because he didn't get 400. And
yeah, crazy, he only got three points.
And just the reaction was so intense. Like, it was a victory many levels higher than just winning the contest.
In the sense of rooting against Russia?
Kind of, yes. Yeah. Especially because it was Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It was all this, like, nobody was going to say it, but there was a sort of underlying kind of David and Goliath story going on.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of follow up with my favorite moment was, I talked about going to Eurovision for ages.
Give or take, yeah.
and for logistical or personal reasons, it never quite worked out. But it was something that I wanted to do very badly and that meant a ton to me. And so when Duncan won this year, I wasn't that big on the song. I'm still not that big on the song. I'm starting to get a bit of... I'm starting to understand why it won. It's because he looked at the camera in that one thing. That is a winning look, by the way. Oh, no. Yeah, of course. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's the orb.
Never doubt the orb.
Praise be to the orb, friend of the show. There was a moment when, and for some reason, I had kind of put it out of my head how much of a favorite he was and how he was probably just going to win. But there were definitely those.
He was the number one since the song came out, and he never fell below first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never. But it seemed like, oh, we could be going to Sweden. I could go to Sweden, whatever, whatever. And for some reason, it was just in the final moments before he was named the winner, I wasn't thinking about that. And then he won, and the gears start turning again in my head, and I realize I can do this. I can go. And I think we said this in the recap in like our second or third episode, how good of a thing the Netherlands winning was for me personally. that it meant it's going to make it so much easier for the stars to align mm-hmm. and go. And when it dawned on me that you're going to Eurovision, I cried a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very overwhelming thing. Danny and I went to a concert right after that show. We saw... I don't know how, but they found me. And it was a good show. But what I remember from being there and the hours after watching it was just this feeling of, I don't know, euphoria maybe, that I just...
Yeah.
It was just such an amazing feeling, and it's one that I've kind of carried with me since and will until 4.5 months from now. Until the end of time.
Yeah.
So that's mine. I'll shut up. Danny, what is your...
I'm so glad I get to have the last say of the entire recap of the 2010s. I'm proud to say that my favorite moment was everything that Hatari did. I'm not joking. From their expert level, like, trolling of the reporters and interviews to incurring fines from the EBU to just having a song that was exactly the type of song that I didn't think that I would ever love. That's it. It's just Hatari. That's it.
All right.
All of it.
Danny's answer was sponsored by Soda Dream. Dare to dream. Soda Dream.
I'm so glad.
Well, I'm looking for my outfit for New Year's. You guys can find us on social media. Hit us up on Twitter or Facebook at 12pointsUSA. You can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can find me directly on Twitter at ESC Insider. Eric, you are at?
I am on Twitter at Eric is tweeting. E-R-I-K is tweeting. Derek is on Twitter at Pontifex, I believe.
I knew it.
Moving on, and Danny is not on Twitter, but he is on your favorite podcast, 12 Points from America.
That's me!
Yeah.
I'm 12 Points from America. All right, well, Happy New Year, everyone out there.
Yeah, Happy New Decade. What a decade it has been.
Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. Of all of the decades, this sure was one of them.
You're Casey Kasem now?
Yes.
Okay.
Somebody has to be.
All right. Well, he's Casey Kasem. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, well, all right. Yeah. America,
stop listening now.
And we're just Jellicle cats.
Huh.
Jellicle cats.
Jellicle cats.
Jellicle cats can and Jellicles do. Jellicles can and Jellicles do. It doesn't make sense.